Welcome to the Love Positivism podcast. I'm Shireen Oberg, and I'm a yoga teacher and author devoted to the path of healing and heart-based living. And I want to help you to step into what you truly are and to your highest potential. On this podcast, I share with you tools and insights to help you move ever forward on your spiritual and healing path. With guests from all over the world, from different wisdom traditions, I wish to create a web of loving energy that permeates the whole world to create more love and peace. You can connect with me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube for more guidance and love. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited to share this episode this week, just a week of celebrating women, International Women's Day coming up, and it's so potent to be able to talk to Tamu today. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Shireen, thank you for having me.
I'm so glad to be connecting with you. I'm so excited for you that this particular week you're also releasing your beautiful book, which I feel is, I mean, just the topic is so resonating with me and everything that, and your story as well, Women Who Work Too Much, Break Free from Toxic Productivity. So, yeah, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
We're excited to take part of that. And maybe, I mean, your story is so beautiful. Maybe you want to introduce yourself and share how this book was birthed and from where it came from.
Well, the book came from my 38-year-old self. So my name is Tamu Thomas, and I have a book being published by Hay House on the 5th of March. And the book is an exploration of the systemic and cultural conditions that create an environment where women find themselves working far too much in every sphere of their lives. And when people hear the title Women Who Work Too Much, they assume I'm talking about women in corporate or women in the workplace, women with businesses. And whilst it is looking a lot at our culture of work and overwork, it's looking at the conditions where women overwork everywhere in their lives. And I'll say from the jump, the number one place where women work too much is in heterosexual relationships, and that's all due to our conditioning. So the book is born of my own experience with toxic productivity. That was my addiction of choice. I was a serial overworker. I thought that's how things were supposed to be. I was brought up by a woman who worked too much. She was brought up by a woman who worked too much. And it's definitely something that is intergenerational. I don't know any well-rested women. Like, I'm on a mission to be a well-rested woman. I don't know any well-rested women. And to take it, you know, on a serious note, the ethnic group my parents come from are either people who were enslaved on their way to the Americas, or people who were somewhere in the Caribbean or North America and brought back to Africa. So my parents are from Freetown, Sierra Leone, and it was a place where enslaved people were placed to experience freedom in their continent of origin. So within my lineage, there are women and men who had to work too much because their lives depended on it. And in my book, I touch on epigenetics and the role that plays. So we have systemic things at play, and we also have biological, genetic things at play. And when I was about 38, I started to feel like life didn't feel like it was mine. I didn't really like myself, and everything about my life was focused on work. And I felt like I was literally scraping the bottom of my barrel for energy for myself and my child. And I remember looking at her one day thinking, I want you to experience me as vibrant. I want you to experience me as energized. I want you to experience or see me experiencing pleasure. And that's not happening right now. But I didn't listen to the call. I was still addicted to the cycle of working and getting the immediate gratification from overwork. And I had an experience. I was a local authority social worker I worked in the team where we often went to court to give the courts information and help the courts make decisions about whether or not children could stay with their families. And I was going to a contentious court case, which was normal. I wasn't fazed by that at all. But on the way, I felt like I was going to die. I was on public transport. It felt like my knees had collapsed. I was shallow breathing. My heart rate was so fast. I didn't have a sense of where I was. And that was the most extreme version of that experience I'd had, but I'd had similar previously. And I kept describing them as heightened periods of anxiety. But when that event happened, I thought, no, something is seriously wrong. So after I managed to get myself together, go to court, give evidence, I made an appointment to see my GP, and through a couple of appointments with my doctor and seeing a consultant psychologist to look at what support I needed, I was told that what I was experiencing was a severe level of moderate depression. And from what I had described, that moderate depression had been in existence for a long time and I hadn't done anything about it. So then it morphed into anxiety and I didn't do anything about it. I kept thinking I wasn't strong enough, I wasn't ambitious enough. And then that developed into having panic attacks. So those were the different ways my body was pleading with me to stop what I was doing and live more holistically. So that led me to set up my business because I just saw so many women around me living a different version of my experience. And I thought, well, it can't just be me. It must be something bigger. And that's when I started having the ideas about the way we're conditioned. And I kept talking about it on social media because I was very passionate about it. I still am. And one day a publisher sent me a DM on Instagram saying, oh, I love this conversation you're having about toxic productivity. Have you thought about writing about it? And I was like, what? I didn't even know I was writing about it so much. So I looked back through my Instagram and I could see that all the way through I had been talking about it and I had been specifically using the term toxic productivity. And then that led to me writing my proposal and being offered a deal with Hay House.
Wow. Yeah, there's so much. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, first of all. And how, I mean, I can resonate with everything that you've said and everything that I've heard from you also in other talks. I can relate to it so much because it is an addiction. And I love also how you like have said before that you can even have that sense of like you were overworking and you loved your work, you were passionate for it, and you were helping people, families, children, all of this. And it's like a very giving job, like mm-hmm. we would say in Swedish, like something that you get filled up by. But it's still, like you said, you can still get burnt out although you're doing something that you love. But that's mm-hmm. that's actually like a trap, because then you can do, I have the same as you with when I'm productive, I feel good. That's like an addiction, right? And we have that same, and so many women are conditioned into it. And I love the intersectionality part because that resonates with me too, how the more layers you put on, like being a woman of color, having all these expectations, being maybe not in a certain environment, it mm-hmm. everything adds on. And I think that so many can experience, can relate to this. Mm-hmm. And this toxic productivity, now that we are approaching International Women's Day, I feel like there has been, because I also work from the spiritual religious side of it with my background, I see that there are thousands of years of conditioning and reconditioning. And what's happening is that this first wave of feminism in the West, which I also cleared up in a different episode, that we still don't have the same, we don't have equality in anywhere still. It looks like we have it, but we women are still second class citizens. So of course we overwork, we do too much, and it's still, I love also what you just said and what employers and others need to know with intersectionality, that we have generational trauma, which I can see in myself grown up in Sweden with my Kurdish background. Like you said, my mother, my grandmother, I can see that coming through me. And we are not wired in the same way, maybe, as our environment. That's why I can see my whole surrounding saying, how do you do this? How do you have time for this? I don't know, but I'm still doing it. So I'm still in it. That's why I need this book, because I feel like, although I have that, my spiritual side has helped me to balance that, but it's still something we have to work with. And did you find that? How long did it take for you to really like recover? So your story, when this happened to you, did you stop working? How did you transition into your own way of working, your entrepreneurship? Because that's also a big part of your journey now.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say, like any addiction, you are in recovery, and you're in recovery for life. If you speak to somebody who is addicted to substances, alcohol, drugs, whatever the case may be, you're never out of recovery. The journey of recovery is lifelong. So I still have those tendencies. I still have those drives to overwork. And the thing is, I know it's there. I'm conscious of it. And even when it starts to happen subconsciously, I know the signs, so I can see what I'm doing and then start making conscious choices about how I respond rather than reacting according to those old patterns. So when we talk about neural rewiring, like creating new neural pathways, what neuroscience shows us is that we're not actually creating brand new pathways, we're overwriting the old pathways. So if you're not mindful, that tried and tested pathway is much easier to go down to. So you have to consciously bring yourself up to your new standard, your new operating system, so to speak. So now I have that memory and I know what I feel like, because toxic productivity, that constant need to be busy and doing things, means that you don't know how to be, which means you don't know how you feel, because you're so used to quickly suppressing your experience so that you can be, so that you can impress, so that you can get that external validation. I didn't know what resentment felt like in my body. It's only through my journey of healing my relationship with myself and getting used to how I feel that I understood what resentment felt like. So now I can sense the resentment as it's coming up, which means my boundaries are very different. I used to automatically say yes. Now it's not an automatic no, but it's an automatic let me have a think and see how this fits in with the rest of my life and what I'm doing before I commit myself to something. And I ask myself, if you didn't want to be liked, if you didn't want to appear nice, would you say yes or no? And will saying yes or no move you closer or further away from your goals, from your priorities, etc., even if the goal or the priority is to rest or do something that day, that week, that is all about me experiencing pleasure? Because restfulness and pleasure is a massive sign of nervous system safety. And when we feel safe inside our nervous systems, we're much more creative. It doesn't mean that everything's positive and everything's fine, but we have a positive outlook. We have a solutions-focused way of being, so we're not catastrophizing all the time. So I just want to state that I'm constantly doing the dance, and it's a constant push and pull. And there are many times that we do need to work what would feel like too much. But that's why we've got a sympathetic nervous system and parasympathetic nervous system. Sometimes we need to engage that sympathetic nervous system, not to be in a state of fight or in a state of fight or flight, but to activate us so that we can have the catalyst we need to build momentum for what we're doing. And that is very different from constantly overworking and constantly overstretching yourself. You're doing it for a finite period of time for a reason. So back to how I transitioned from social work to having my business, I had to work too much to be able to transition. I'm a parent, I'm a single parent, I have responsibility for a whole radiant, beautiful human being. So I had to make sure I had the resources to look after us both. So I went from being a full-time employed social worker to becoming self-employed so that I could choose the work I did. It was still very busy, and it was even more challenging because as an independent social worker, you're dealing with much more complicated cases and you're working at a higher level and you're on your own. You don't have the infrastructure you would have for a local authority. But what that did was give me more autonomy over my time. So my business started off, even though it felt like my business was my side gig, I was doing them both together. So I was having the income that met my needs from the social work career whilst I built my business. And as soon as I didn't wait to replace my social work salary, as soon as my business was generating enough income for my daughter and I's essential needs to be met, I left the social work and then I transitioned into doing my business full time. And that process took about 18 months. So there was a period of working too much, but one of the business, it was like regeneration. If you're into human design, I'm a manifesting generator, and I was using that generator in a really meaningful way. So I didn't feel totally depleted like I did with doing the social work. So for a period of time, I had to do too much, and that paved the way for me creating a business where I'm able to have not balance, because we never have balance, but have harmony and structure a business that supports who I am rather than being squeezed into a small box.
Yeah, that's what a journey, and to find that balance. And sometimes maybe we feel like, I don't know if you agree with this, but let's say there is this empowerment now that we feel just as individual, more autonomous. It feels like the work life has changed a little bit. It has become more and more individualized and also a little bit more flexible in certain sectors, not all. Mm-hmm. But that also leads us to want even more. And then, but can that also, how can one not chronically overwork? Because what I hear from entrepreneurs, it's really, it can become very maybe again, it's a lot of giving back to yourself, but mm-hmm. it can still become, how do you, I love this bit about there's an empowerment piece, especially now when we're like, we feel more empowered to do our own thing, but also balancing that with not overworking for chronically, like you said, yeah. just for a period of time. How do we make sure that we're not doing that?
Well, for me, and what I encourage my clients to do, is to set your own success metrics. So a lot of the chronic overworking arises because we have got goals and aspirations that aren't necessarily of our own. So when I first came into the coaching industry, everybody was talking about having a six-figure business. Then it became multi-six-figure. Now it's a seven-figure business. Now, I'm sure you will get this because of the work you do. I know that it is probable, I believe it's within my destiny, that I will have a seven-figure business, just because of who I am and what I do. But my intention is not to have a seven-figure business. That's not my success metric. My success metric is me feeling satisfied, fulfilled, and at peace. When I say that I'm on a mission to be a well-rested woman, I want to create work, or I'm in the process of creating work that supports that. So for me, it's much more important that I'm creating the income I need to create and the type of work I need to create. That means I work 3 days a week. That means during the day 25 to 28 of my cycle, when I get really tired, I can have a nap in the middle of the day if I feel like it. I want a business that is spacious enough for me to have my two magnesium salt baths in the middle of the day. I don't want to squeeze that in to the end of the night. when it's a particularly beautiful day, I want to walk and meet my daughter from college so that we can walk home together. If I want to, I want to be able to go and journal in the Peace Garden in my local park because it is so beautiful. And me watching the relationship between the bees and the butterflies and the birds is something that gives me a lot of joy. So when I'm talking about breaking free from toxic productivity and finding your joy, if we utilize and look at our joy and our pleasure and what feels like satiating and tingly as our success metric, a lot of us aren't going to get caught up in busying ourselves to reach these seven-figure, multi-eight-figure milestones that does require a lot of work. Shireen, I have calculated down to the penny. I know what a satiating, sensual, wholehearted, yes, feeling life. I know how much that will cost me. And that is what I'm aiming for. I just know that there is more for me, but I am not going to overwork and overextend myself in the pursuit of that because that's not my aim.
That's beautifully put. And I think it, you give also perspective because I feel like when you put these goals and aims without the whole picture, it's like a metric that is only numerical. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say anything else about that end goal, like everything around it, the soft values. And mm-hmm. I love that because it feels like some have that drive to do whatever it takes, and but it's like on of the cost for something else. You have to release something else. So I love that that you also bring in, because the talk I listened to today with you also bring in that pleasure, how pleasure and that sensation, since you worked a lot with the nervous system and mm-hmm. vagus nerve and all of that, how that comes in. And I mean, we can all feel when we are not balanced in our body. Maybe it's also some women who are listening today might be almost in that state which you explained, but maybe we're not aware enough. Like, what are important symptoms or signs that we are overextending ourselves, and how can we then come back, would you think? Especially like from your book, I guess there's a lot of good facts and tools for that. But what is your tips?
Well, you find yourself saying should a lot. I should do. So should is a word. We often feel like we can't say no. So I hear women saying things like, I'm exhausted, but I've got to go to this thing. I've got to show my face. So it's that kind of narrative. It is when we feel unsafe to rest, and people be like, what do you mean I feel unsafe to rest? When somebody is sitting down resting, they feel guilty. They feel ashamed. I should be using my time productively. I shouldn't waste the day, even though their body is calling out for them to have rest that is beyond sleep. And rest doesn't mean just sitting down doing nothing. It could be, you know, Dr. Saundra Dalton has got a TED talk about the seven types of rest. It could be creative rest, going to an art gallery, talk like what I do, going to my local Peace garden and doing my journal there because I'm surrounded by beauty. It could be having a social media or tech break, like staying away from tech. There are so many different ways we can do this, but it's when we feel like we can't. It's when we feel like we can't stop working. So if we're at home, we know there's always a job to be done, but is your house going to fall apart because you decided not to clean the bathroom today? Probably not. So it's about moving away from this obsessive, compulsive need to be doing something. It's those women who are offering to help when they're drowning themselves. They can barely keep up with what they're doing. It's the people who everybody can rely on. We know that she'll say yes, we can depend on her. And people don't really think, what has this dependable person got going on for herself? And that dependable person never thinks about, what have I got going on for myself? They think it's more important to feel bad for letting themselves down than it is to look bad. They would much rather feel bad than look bad according to other people, when invariably, if you say to somebody you can't do something, most people feel like, fine, okay, they'll probably move on to the next person that will be able to help them. It's that feeling that your brain is constantly going, this needs to be done, that needs to be done, I've got to do this, I want to do that, I need to do the other, and there's no stop, there's no shut, and there's never a sense of completion. You don't feel like anything is complete, you don't think anything's done, so you're running around life like a computer with lots of tabs open. And I know that some people constantly have tabs open and they are terrified about what they'll lose if they close the tabs. We are terrified about what we'll lose in terms of people's perception on of us, in terms of the success we've created if we decide to close one or all of those tabs. It's a belief that now is your chance, and if you don't seize the opportunity now, you're never going to have that opportunity again, which just isn't true.
Yeah, great, great insights. And I think many of us can relate to a lot of those signs and symptoms. And like you said, it feels kind of like not accepting the space and time restriction somehow, because mm-hmm. if we are present, we know that in the now, this is what's possible. If we're constantly, isn't that the anxiety part too? Like constantly running and yes. almost running away or dealing with the anxiety by doing something. You talked a lot about anxiety because I feel like it's a pandemic right now, doesn't it? Like everyone is having anxiety, and it's maybe a lot due to all the technologies that we have. We didn't have that before, these expectations, because this was the thing again, if we go back to thinking about this wave of feminism that came in, especially in the West due to labor force and all of that, it kind of, because we spoke yesterday about it in a different podcast about the traditionally female jobs that are still underpaid and all of that. But mm-hmm. just in general that it's still like something, maybe like you said, if things go in generations, we know that one time we were not able to do the things that we are doing today. So maybe that's also like triggering, but we don't know it. But we live in a society where we can do anything and not be like stopped by anyone. But it's kind of like we are moving into I feel like the new wave, especially the wave that's created in the West. I'm not talking about other countries. Mm-hmm. Most of the world, like I would say a big part of the world, women are still second class citizens. So that's yes. just one thing. Then mm-hmm. we have the intersectionality on top of that makes it even more. Mm-hmm. And then even in our European countries or Britain, we have still barriers. We can see it in the statistics, yes. how it is in the workforce. We cannot deny that. But then we also have this space where many individual women or organizations are doing a lot of progress, which also, for example, with your book, I feel like that's one pillar of this new wave of also stepping back and say, I don't need to do everything right now. I don't need to it's just that we yeah. are releasing the masculine part of what it means to be full in ourselves, yeah. right?
Yeah, yeah, totally. When I look at previous versions of feminism, it looked like trying to do what men do. I'm Gen X. When I was growing up, there were lots of narratives about anything a man can do, a woman can do better. There was in the UK, there was ladette culture. So women were out, they were drinking alcohol and getting drunk in the same way men would do, and then rolling into work, still smelling of alcohol, still a bit hungover. And it was funny. That was a thing to be done. And they were like the lads because they were able to make their way into work. They weren't hysterical and all of this other kind of stuff. And I think what's happening now is women have realized we can behave, quote unquote, like men all we want. We will still not have the privileges and the access men do. So there is a significant, especially because of social media and the way womanhood, motherhood and the things that are associated with womanhood are being shared so candidly. Things that we would be ashamed of, we would keep quiet about, we wouldn't talk about publicly, we're talking about it publicly. People are inviting us into their homes and we're seeing their lived experience. Whether it's things like talking about perimenopause or menopause more broadly, we're talking about our hormonal cycles and menstruation, and we're tracking our periods and we're talking about it online. People talking about how challenging it is to be a mother, whether it is a stay-at-home mother, whether it's a mother who also works, who's got a business, or whatever the case may be, we're starting to see that this narrative about we can have it all actually means we can do it all, because the infrastructure isn't there to support us. And we still live in a life where we still in our homes often subscribe to traditional masculine and feminine roles, which means a woman goes out to work and is bossing it all day, but within the house is expected to behave like the little woman, getting the dinner ready, sorting out all the domestic and emotional labor. And we're saying, we don't want what you call balance. We don't want to be doing everything everywhere. We want to be doing the things that help us feel good and allow us to show up as we want to. And if that means we are asking for flexible working conditions so that we can parent like we're parents rather than parent like we parent round the corners of working, or if that is setting up a business where we can work all the hours we want to if we want to make as much money as we want to, we're actually in a state where we are exercising choice. And what I'm seeing is it's not just for the individual. Women are making change that benefits women, society as a whole as well. Previously, my looking at feminism as a Black woman, as a woman of the global majority, as a woman of color, I saw feminism as something that was about particularly white women having the same privileges as white men. And through the lens of intersectionality, white women are seeing, actually, we don't want to be like our male counterparts. We want to be women. And there are many people that are able to see that if we really want to create equity, which is the precursor to equality, we need to be standing firm and strong alongside and for the most marginalized in our group. Because if the most marginalized people are supported, it automatically supports all of us and levels out that playing field. There are lots of women who don't want to, not just women, because a lot of people since the pandemic appreciate the value of being able to work from home, whether it's full-time or part-time. But there were a lot of women who were like, I don't necessarily want to climb up this corporate ladder. I'd much rather create my own thing so that I can have the harmony with my life that I want to. And then there are lots of women who are saying, I don't want it all. I want the corporate. I want the corner office. I want the big city view. I don't want children. I want me, my partner, and my life, and that's it. And I think there are many more of us who are able to think about what is going to support us to be a better person, and not just for ourselves, but in relationship with other people, because we're not just individuals, we're individuals in relationship with other individuals. And that also includes the planet that birthed us all, Earth.
Yes. So beautiful. I mean, there's so much that you said that was just beautiful. How also it's about not having one mold that is right, and the image that we've grown up with, what it means to be a strong, empowered woman. It can be so many different things. Mm-hmm. And we mm-hmm. have different, like you said, the equity part, we have different places where we start from. Mm-hmm. And there's a choice, and we spoke about this too, like, how do you balance? I mean, there's two parts. It's also some choose one path of, for example, motherhood, but not the other, or mm-hmm. try to merge it together. And it was the same we spoke about yesterday, about do you choose motherhood part or this spiritual part? It's also so many images out there of what it should look like, but it's again setting up something that we have to conform to. So we have to be very careful. And when we speak in these type of forums, to acknowledge, I feel like there's not enough acknowledgement when we're speaking about women's rights, that we have a wide range of diverse backgrounds, yeah, like you said, different challenges, mm-hmm, cultural, ethnic, social, everything. There's so much. Mm-hmm. And then that when we are doing a work, I feel like when we're talking about feminism, it's so important to acknowledge. I did an internship at UN Women a couple of years ago, and mm-hmm, it was so important for me to learn about, for example, like you said, we have to take care of the earth and the earth keepers. It's the women who traditionally had that inner wisdom, yeah, and somehow that's why the indigenous cultures have always been suppressed, and it's mm-hmm still happening, and it's colonialism, and all of this has mm-hmm brought upon, and it's made the situation worse for women. Yes. So when we look at it historically, and then now we are in a place where this is still not recognized, and I think it's important when we talk like in public about feminism to always address the intersectionality and understand that even if from one perspective it looks like we are like very far ahead, but for someone else it's not, so mm-hmm it's really important to see that. And it's also, even if you do choose, for example, motherhood and you stay at home, you can stay, like in a country like Sweden where that's it's also normal to be home equally, mm-hmm, like maternal mm-hmm and maternally, but it still shows in the numbers that women are still staying home longer, and then they also lose opportunities for promotion. So it takes longer for women. Yes. It takes on the. And I wanted to ask you, because you are also a mother, and how did that burnout experience manifest in your family life? If you were focusing on work, and how did you feel the motherhood changed when you could be more like on your own, like terms? Did it change the way you could live in your motherhood?
It changed. So in relation to how the overworking and burnout impacted my motherhood, it impacted me far more than it impacted my motherhood, because I was like, there was no way in the world my child was going to suffer. So it was much more about me neglecting me as opposed to me neglecting her. However, what did change is that I became more present in my parenting, and it meant that after school care and things like that weren't needed because I was available for the school pickups and stuff. And what I know to be true, not even what I know to be true, what is a fact, I was a lot more irritated by little things when I was stressed out because I didn't have the capacity. Being a social worker, being the person I am, I was able to contain that irritation somewhat, but we know energetics, energy is strong. So my child probably did feel my irritation, even though I was trying to conceal it. But that irritation melted away. So I wasn't having the internal wrangling of catching the irritation and suppressing it, because I wasn't really irritated at my child doing the things that children are supposed to do. I was irritated because I was depleted and therefore didn't have the capacity. So that was the biggest impact it had. And it also meant that I wasn't able to make what I would say like loving choices for myself. And I wasn't able to role model that to my child. However, I was able to remedy that because I was able to leave full-time working. I learned what boundaries are. And I was very, like, I've always been mindful about what I role modeled to her, but I think the energetics of it changed because energetically I was different. I had so much more spaciousness and flexibility. And speaking to the spiritual piece, what I teach is outside of Mother Earth herself, we are some of the most, you know, spiritual beings on this planet. Our nervous system is a portal for spirituality. When we talk about things like the law of attraction, as much as I think some people teach it in quite a toxic way, the principles are, it's about the law of radiation. It's about being what you want to experience. If you want to experience love, you're being love, you're radiating love. If you want to experience abundance, you're being abundant, you're radiating abundance. Having a regulated nervous system, and that doesn't mean it's calm and everything is dandy all day long. It means that the nervous system is flexible enough to expand and contract, supports us with the manifestation, with the things we want to birth into this world. It supports us with the law of attraction and the other universal laws. So when we're doing the things like whether it's breath work, meditation, yoga, journaling, somatic movement practices, when we are doing our gratitude practices and all those sorts of things, they help to regulate our nervous system and widen our capacity, widen our window of tolerance. So one of the things I love about polyvagal theory, one of the like teachers in polyvagal theory, Deb Dana, she talks about polyvagal theory being the science of falling in love with life and taking the risk of living. When you're doing these practices, especially those spiritual practices, they help you cultivate a sense of inner safety that enables you to take the risk of being honest about what you want and going for it. It enables you to take the risk of showing up authentically and trusting that anybody that is repelled by your authenticity is making space for you to be a magnet for people who are attracted to your authenticity. So I talk about science as being the spirituality we've been able to test and repeat and quantify. And there are some things we should never know. There are some things we should never know how to quantify and how to make an exact science of it. Even if you think about the fact that there was a 400 trillion in one chance of you and I being born, those odds are impossible. Yet here we are. Miracles, walking, talking, breathing on this planet. We as human beings, whether we admit it or not, whether we believe it or not, whether we accept it or not, by virtue of the fact that we are here, I am here talking to you. I'm breathing whilst I'm talking to you. My heart is beating whilst I'm talking to you. My blood cells are flowing throughout my body whilst I'm talking to you. I'm sensing what's going on in my environment. This is spiritual. This is spirituality in motion.
Yes, I completely agree. And what you're saying is also that this is also something that we've been moving away from, that the embodied experience is our spiritual path as well as souls. Mm-hmm. Why would we not? Then we wouldn't need to incarnate. So I love that you said that, and how important our senses are. And in some traditions, it is important. And we know that the connection to our senses and our embodiment is important. And this actually leads me, because I'm looking at this card, I drew a card from my healing oracle card deck, and it's a woman sitting on the earth, and I already drew it before, and it's, my body knows how to self-heal. Mm-hmm. And you see, see this, yeah, and our body is a manifestation of the earth, of the elements, of all of the directions. It's everything within us. Mm-hmm. And especially with us being cyclical, like you said, like tuning into that, I mean, that's a game changer. Mm-hmm. To stop trying to be like flat, because we're not flat, we are cyclical, and stop suppressing that. It's really important. And I love this. This card is one of the last cards in the physical healing theme of the healing oracle. And my body knows how to self-heal. It's also about this, when we step back and we've, you know, the yin and yang balance, like the receptive state, which we cannot be in if we're always active and doing stuff, going upward, outward. We want to go within. That's when the body is allowed to self-heal. And I think one of the things that I also wanted to share in regards to burnout from a Chinese medicine perspective, something that many women are struggling with is blood or iron deficiency.
Hello.
Yeah. And this in Chinese medicine is said to be due when you overthink or you overdrive your body, you consume the yin. So that can manifest, for example, when you have yin deficiency, you have nightly sweats. Maybe in the day you're very cold, but then in the night, this, it's like the body cannot be nourished. The mm-hmm. organs are not nourished by the yin. So one thing I think that people can think about, because I'm seeing this as a chronic thing, and I have as well, and it's about not consuming that life energy. And many people do get cycle issues. That's also about this water element. So it's so many things that need to be balanced. And we are the embodiment of some, both the earth and the universe, everything. And everything is in balance around us. We can just copy what's happening in nature, stars, planets.
Yeah. One of my teachers, Michaela Boehm, talked about the chronic overthinking as we draw all the energy from our bodies and divert it up to our brains to overthink. So if you think about that, that life force energy that nourishes your vital organs, your soft tissue, your cells, all of that, it is being directed away from your body into your brain. So your brain is overactive. You've got all of this frenetic energy taking place up there. And it got me thinking, I like to think in threes, mind, body, spirit, mind, body, soul, however you like to respond to it. And what I know from my experience and from working with humans for a very long time, alignment, if we look at alignment on a biological level, it's when brain, heart and gut, or gut, heart and brain are working in alignment together. There's no tension between subconscious and conscious. It's all flowing. So you're getting that deep embodied wisdom from the gut. You're getting that courage and that opening from the heart. And then you're getting the processing and the logic. All of that is working in tandem. The way we operate, because of our conditioning, we hear about things like mindset work, mind over matter, as if your body is a lump of moving matter. We have been conditioned to separate our brains from our body, when actually your brain is an organ within your body. And movement practices, self-touch, meditation, all of those sorts of practices start to create trust between your brain, your heart and your gut, because we operate in a way where your heart and your gut are like, I don't trust that brain, because we give that brain divine wisdom that has been cultivated over millennia. And our brain says, I'm going to keep banging my head against the brick wall of logic. So there's a lot of mistrust that happens because of our conditioning. So these practices you're talking about, one of my healing modalities that I engaged in healing my relationship with myself was Chinese medicine. So I would have weekly acupuncture and lymphatic drainage massage. And when I went to see the doctor initially, she kept being really worried, saying about my ovaries. And I was like, listen, I'm 45. My ovaries aren't supposed to be like what they were like years ago. But she kept saying, her English wasn't very good, but she kept saying, bad blood, this is bad blood. And she explained to me how the anxiety, chronic overthinking and overworking was depleting my iron, vitamin D, like you name it, I was low in it. So a lot of our work was around that. And the number one piece of medicine, or the number one medication she prescribed to me, was sleep. Sleep. It wasn't all of these hacks and this, and it was sleep, because that's where our body has the opportunity to restore, to replenish. You talking about, you know, self-healing, sleep is one of the best methods of self-healing. So now I don't play about my sleep and my sleep routine. If it's going to interfere with my sleep, it has to be really important. Otherwise, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I can only agree. The sleep, that's like my life revolves around my sleep. I'm like a baby. I need to go early and then have enough hours. And I think we've been also conditioned to you can have 6-7 hours, but no. And women, we need, I mean, I feel the best when I have like 9 hours sleep. And it's because also when you sleep a couple of hours before midnight, then you have the most potent sleep. Yes. And the organs are replenishing. That's also the Chinese medicine. How they replenish, then you know when you wake up, all of that has happened. If you're narrowing it down, you're not getting the optimal healing, like you said. And also, like you said, it's kind of like the body and the energy is working always together. So if you are, for example, iron deficient, it can also cause more anxiety, and then the anxiety causes more of that. So it's like a constant like balancing. Yes. And we need to, and also for people who are worriers, worrying a lot, that consumes qi. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we can feel it in our gut. It's there. Yeah. And it's when we know this, especially with the sleep as well, connected to the heart is connected to the womb. Like you said, it's everything connected. Yeah. The Shen, our higher consciousness, sleeps in the heart at night. So if we, that's how Chinese medicine explains it. And if we don't have the sleep, or if we are worried, it's going to affect our sleep as well. So sometimes maybe the sleep takes time to come back to
absolutely
normality, right? Some people have...
Again, it's that trust. I don't trust you with this. So we have to, like... When I think about how our cultures create environments where we're detached from ourselves, we become strangers to ourselves. So we have to rebuild that relationship, rebuild the relationship with trust, rebuild the relationship with our intuition, rebuild the relationship with our felt sense. Like, we have to treat it like it's somebody we've just met and we're building a friendship with that element of us. We can't rush it because it's going to be overwhelming, especially after so many years of neglecting those parts, because we learn our needs are too needy. Our needs prevent us from being able to be productive. Our needs prevent us from being ambitious, when that's not the case. And when you think about us as women, women do need more sleep than men. And when you think about us as women, we have so much more going on in 1 month in terms of our hormonal cycles and the different processes our bodies engage in for us to, because estrogen and all of that is not just about preparing for a baby. It does all sorts of other things. So we need more rest, because even when we're sitting still, our bodies are biologically, if you're a biological woman, your body is working harder than a man. A man gets a pump of testosterone every 15 minutes. We go through our spring, summer, autumn, winter, but our society conditions us to behave as if we're in spring, summer all the time, when that's just not the case. There's nothing in nature that stays the same all year round, but we expect ourselves to. We expect ourselves to be like the machines we built to make our lives easier. Instead of leaving the machines to make our lives easier, we now judge our humanity against algorithms and mechanical things, that it's making us chronically ill. We've got so many technological and medical advancements, yet we are the most stressed, the most anxious we've been in modern times.
Yeah, you're so right. And that spring and summer, the element of wood and fire, that's like the most imbalanced, I think, mm-hmm. that we have. So it's really important to find, I mean, there's so many ways to do this, but I feel like your book has such an important message just by hearing the title of it. I think it can resonate with so many out there. So I hope that this podcast and also your message and your work can help others, because when we are shifting as well, like you said, and we're so connected to the earth, so whatever our body is doing, we're integrating it into earth and the opposite as well. Yeah. I think that this is so important, and I'm excited to just tell us how we can find the book and also what you're offering right now that for people who want to connect with you?
Yeah, so my book is available pretty much everywhere. So if you type my name and the book title in, it will come up in many places, and I'll share a link with you. I've got an Amazon link that will convert to whichever country you're in. If you are an Instagram user, you can find me there, Tamu, T-A-M-U dot Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S. I usually share what I'm up to there. At the moment, I am honoring my season and I'm slowing right down. So in terms of work offerings, the thing I have available at the moment is my Life and Business Sanctuary membership group, which is helping women to create a sturdy foundation for themselves and their businesses. I'm going to have some one-to-one spaces open at the beginning of the summer. But for now, my focus is not just being present for the book launch process. I want to have the space to enjoy it as well.
That's really important. And I think that it's, you put a lot into it. It's a birthing and then the resting afterwards, at least for 40 days, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Come back to.
Yes. Yes.
It makes sense. But I'm so grateful for the time and your wisdom that you have given to us all today. And I want to congratulate you again, and I recommend everyone to check out Tamu's Instagram page, and also I'll put all your links in the show notes. And thank you again. I really enjoyed speaking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.